Welcome to the Work-Life Balance Project. Hey everyone, welcome to this week's episode of the Work-Life Balance Project. I'm your host, Stephen Olson, and we're here to talk about how working professionals manage to succeed at their career without having to sacrifice their family. I've come to realize lately that a lot of people look up to successful entrepreneurs. Our culture seems to stress more and more that it's possible to create your own success rather than having to grind away at a job you're not even passionate about. Lots of people I talk to have entrepreneurial ambitions, but many of them seem to be held back by fear. Sometimes the fear is of not being good enough or not knowing what to do. Sometimes the fear is just of failure in general. But I think the fear that's most relevant for a family-centered audience is the fear of taking a financial risk and putting your family in serious danger. My interview today is with an entrepreneur named Grant Collard. He's the founder and CEO of a property management and real estate investment company called Redstone Residential. They've had a ton of success over the last 7 years, especially in the student housing market where Grant got started. Grant and his wife, Kristen, who has an entrepreneurial itch of her own, have 3 beautiful children. And although Grant's experience may seem unique, his insights are extremely valuable for those who are thinking about running a business and a family, but are maybe too scared to give it a try. With that, let's get to the interview. Grant, it's really good to have you on the Work-Life Balance Project podcast.
Thanks for having me.
We're excited to hear about your story and starting your company and with your family. So, could you start off by just telling us a little bit about how you got started, what you do now?
Yeah, absolutely. So, should I start from birth?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll go. Well, maybe we'll make it to second grade by the end of the end of the hour.
Perfect. Yeah.
No. So born in San Diego and came up to school at BYU. Had a great experience there. Actually, my freshman year, I got to know my wife, or I guess my to-be wife, Kristen. It was like a March day. I was being antisocial in my room, and she just walked in and said hi. So that was kind of cool. I finished up my freshman year in college and ended up going on a two-year LDS mission to Guatemala. And that was a fun experience, learned a lot, met a lot of cool people, cool culture. When I got back, you know, I think that what I always wanted to be was a doctor since I was a little kid. And so I was a molecular biology major. I think I was a microbiology major, and then they created another one and I switched to molecular biology. I still don't know what the difference is, but about 2 years into that, I remember vividly sitting in a cancer lab, and I was working with this group. We were growing breast cancer cells in some kind of solution, and we were trying to attack them with different types of chemicals to see if it would affect their growth rates, which is really kind of silly now that I think about it, because we would be like, yeah, we poisoned them with straight up poison, and it killed them. And you're like, yes, I that's not going to work in real life, you know. But I remember sitting there, and we were running, you know, some type of experiment, and we had some downtime. And I looked around the room, and I saw some of my colleagues, kind of lab mates in there, and they were all reading, you know, some super legit official academic journals. They were reading Science and Nature and those sorts of things. And I was sitting at my little station with the Wall Street Journal, and really just didn't have a whole lot of interest in reading academic journals. And I just had this moment where I was like, what am I doing? This is insane. I don't jive with these people. We don't share any interests. I don't even really want to be a doctor. I think that a lot of the reasons that I thought I wanted to be a doctor was because I just assumed that they made a lot of money and then I could invest in real estate, right? which is kind of what I wanted to do for a long time. So it was interesting. This was the last day of the semester that you could drop classes. And I remember it was a Friday afternoon, and I walked out of there, and I called Kristen, and I was like, you know, I got to make a change. Like, this isn't good. And she was super cool about it. She was like, well, hey, let's get you doing something that you really want to do. And so I remember dropping all of my molecular biology classes. And by that time, they were like 400 level classes. It was kind of sad. I was like, oh, man. I flipped through the course catalog that night. And I was like, I've got to change to something that I'm interested in. And then I saw finance with a real estate emphasis. And I thought, yes, like that is exactly what I want to do. So we dropped everything and added all those classes. And I just kind of did a pivot and said, we're going to have a different life than I thought.
And what year was this?
I think this was 2006. Yeah. And this is so literally
perfect timing.
Yeah. Yeah. It was good. At that point, I got really, really interested in real estate investment. So I did an internship with a Provo group called Peak Capital Partners, and they have since become like a multi-billion-dollar asset company. I mean, just really phenomenal. But it was cool being there and watching the three founders as they kind of cobbled together some deals and how they were looking at risk and return. And I think that influenced me a lot. I also was working as a real estate agent. I was a mortgage broker during college. I was just trying to hustle any way I could to get more knowledge of the industry with the end goal to become some type of a real estate investment company.
So you graduate in which year?
2008, yeah.
2008?
Yes, yes.
And things are looking...
Well, by then, it was actually really scary. I had decided in 2007, the summer of 2007, I remember watching real estate as kind of a leading indicator start to pull back. And we saw that house prices had plateaued and that now there was almost this panic. I mean, it was actually really scary kind of dipping my toes into the industry and watching this happen. And that fall, we literally watched the economy fall off a cliff. I mean, and it continued for another year through 2008, but it seems like that fall, I remember having a business professor in my money banking and business class just looking at some of the indicators of the economy, yield curves, you know, treasuries, what the Fed was doing, and he's almost somber, like, guys, I'm scared. And so with that, real estate was kind of falling apart. The investment environment was kind of on hiatus just because credit markets had frozen. It was very, very difficult to obtain financing for real estate investments. So I was actually working at the end of my college career as a mortgage broker because that was one thing that was still going. But even that started to fall apart. I decided to go work with a group in Dallas. It was a bunch of guys that had left in the Dallas office and started a financial services company. And I don't know what, you know, I think I was really impressed by those guys and they are impressive guys, but I think I knew within a week or two, this isn't gonna work. You know, it was kind of a situation where, and I get it because we're doing it in our company now, things were becoming systematized. They were a startup, but kind of exiting the really small feel where it was more like, hey, be in your chair by, you know, 8 a.m. and you sit there till 6 p.m. and crank it out. And I don't know. I had a hard time with kind of somebody else controlling that. I was frustrated with the structure. You know, I've always been the kind of guy that liked to work at, you know, 2 in the morning or 10 in the morning or whatever, just kind of get it done, but maybe on a little bit more chaotic basis. So that didn't end well. I actually was there for a little less than a year and ended up getting marched out of their office to my car by two guys bigger than me. And, you know, I had kind of a moment. I remember sitting there in my car starting it, and I thought, well, Kristen's going to be thrilled because she doesn't know I like this, or she knows I don't like this. But I just had an epiphany. I was like, you know, I'm never working for someone again. Ever, 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 ever. I'm not doing this. I can't do this. I felt like a caged animal. And it's almost like a little bit like, what's wrong with me? You know, these are nice people. We're doing nice things. This is very normal. But I just didn't get it. It just didn't work. So.
And at this point, it's just you and Kristen, or?
Yeah. So interesting story there. I think that I got fired on Monday, and my son Jack was born on Saturday. So it was a great week, actually. I remember, you know, we were like, hey, we're trying to make the baby hurry up. So Kristen and I are playing like tennis, and she's like jumping and stuff. But it was interesting. I think I look back on it now, and I think I was not very stressed out, actually. And I think there were a couple reasons for that. We kind of planned to move back to Utah and start a real estate company, or to get involved in a real estate company. And, you know, we had saved up a good amount of money there. So I thought, you know, whatever we do, we have sufficient runway to make something else work.
And so you decide to leave Dallas?
Yep. So, yeah, we bailed. We spent another month in Dallas. Just hard to move when your kid's 2 days old. So we spent a month there. And then it was a little rough, you know, during college. We had a great setup. Kristen was done with school and she was working. I called her the sugar mama because she had a great job, and it was even better. Her grandma had this empty house in Pleasant Grove, and she was like, oh, well, why don't you guys just live there as long as you want, rent free? And we're like, oh yeah, I mean, yeah. and so that was like how we finished college, or at least how I finished college. And when we came back, it was just different. You know, someone else was in the house, which is great, another cousin. And so we moved into my in-laws' basement. And that was a little bit of like, kind of like a tail between your legs moment. You know, I was wondering, are they thinking like, wow, this is a great son-in-law we've got, you know? Or Kristen's like, yeah, my husband's so awesome. But it worked out really well. You know, we joke with our son Jack that he spent the first, you know, 9 months of his life in a closet. We had his crib in a closet, and Kristen and I were in like her like old bedroom. I mean, it was a big house, like it was fine, but there's just a couple things where it was like, all right, I just got to swallow my pride here and like focus on our goals here. But were
you worried that you weren't going to be able to find anything or start anything?
You know, I think we had a pretty good plan A set up. I had been talking to a guy who later became a partner, and when I was in Texas, and we were both saying like, yeah, we need to quit our jobs. This is lame. You know, we want to go and start something. And I think some of the resistance was tough. I mean, talking to some family members, they were saying, you know, we're in the middle of a recession here. And you have job offers here. You have lots of good job offers, and you're choosing to not do those things.
And how could you still be thinking about real estate?
Right. Yeah, and especially in the sector, you're like, hey, yeah, we want to start investing in managing multifamily housing. They're like, yeah, you're an idiot. This is not a good time for that. So that was a little bit tough. I think, you know, I got some negative feedback from some family members, you know, that were like, you know, how can you do this to your family? And I'm like, look. You know, we're going to give a shot. We have enough in a savings account to last us, you know, hopefully a year or so. And you're living in your in-laws' basement. What are your expenses, right? So I still remember some of those credit card statements were like $400 for like the whole month, you know, and it was like gas, a little bit of food, and like maybe like car insurance or something. So it was awesome. I was like, oh, I can do this for 10 years. I can wait this out.
So what did you do?
Yeah, so as soon as we got back, we really didn't waste any time. I met up with this guy who eventually became my partner, and I mean, day one, I think Monday, we were sitting in an office and kind of writing ideas down on a whiteboard and saying, okay, you know, here's some options. This is what we want to do. Let's create some relationships. Let's get some introductions. And it was really cool. I mean, I look back on it now and think, yeah, I think I spent the first 3 weeks making a very detailed Excel model of what the business would look like, which was kind of useless. Literally, you just needed to start hustling and bringing something together. But it ended up working out. I think we saw our first paycheck, you know, maybe 5 or 6 months in, which was fantastic. You know, I know a lot of people go a lot longer than that, but that was a welcome time.
And you've now grown into, I guess we should explain what
you
do.
Yeah, exactly. So my company is Redstone Residential. We're a top 25 student housing operator in the U.S. We have about 13,000 beds of student housing, both owned and managed. How we really got started in 2009, kind of during all this that we were talking about, is ended up acquiring a very small company. And It was interesting. They operated out of a construction trailer next to Centennial Apartments at BYU, and it was really interesting. When I got in there, I saw they use kind of DOS based accounting systems. They use paper ledgers to track all of their rents and ledgers, and they even had one of those tractor feed printers with like the green bar accounting ledger on it. And at that time, you know, I was 25. I was like, you know, I'm not a genius, but I don't think this is like what we should be using. So we just went to work. We ended up converting all those systems onto kind of cloud-based systems, really kind of modernizing the business, creating handbooks, systems, processes, procedures, controls. We looked a lot at what kind of the greats of the industry had done, and then we would honestly just try and emulate everything that they did. And so I'd say from 2009 to 2012 or so, we were really just trying to figure out the business, how to underwrite these types of deals, how to manage and operate student housing. And then in 2013, we kind of hit an inflection point and really started to grow, brought on some really great people. And we've grown about 25% annualized rate since 2009. We're about 13,000 beds now of student housing, and probably 17,000 by the end of the year. So it's gone well. Yeah.
And as you have grown as a company, you've also grown as a family, right?
We have.
How
yes.
Have those fit in?
Yeah. So Jack was born in 2009, kind of at the beginning of all this. Layla was born in 2011. And that was kind of as we were starting to see some success, very exciting times. And my youngest, Deacon, he's 2.5 now. He was born in 2014. It's been great. I mean, I feel like having them as part of the family has never held me back in any way on what we're trying to accomplish in the business.
Have you ever been able to involve them in anything in the business? They're obviously still pretty young, but I think one of the concerns with being an entrepreneur or thinking about being an entrepreneur and having a family is that you won't be able to think about two things at once. You might only think about your business when you're at home and not be able to devote that time to your family. How do you feel like you've been able to balance those two things?
Yeah, I think, good question. I think that for most entrepreneurs, I think that they don't see a huge division between their work and their life, right? Especially in the very beginning when it's all consuming and you're really kind of every waking hour trying to work on your business. And it scales back as you start to have some success and employees to do that for you. But I don't think I've really ever kind of differentiated. For me, it's all life. My kids have been, I wouldn't say a big part of my business, but they spend time here in the office. My oldest is 8 now, Jack, and he loves coming to work with me. He loves kind of walking units at different properties. He gets really excited. He likes to tell people, these are my daddy's, buildings. he doesn't understand that there's lots of investors involved as well. he thinks they're all mine. He'll be disappointed someday. But it's been good. I've loved watching my kids try and kind of invent their own businesses. So Jack, for years, has been pestering us and saying, "Hey, you know, I really want to open up like a lemonade stand." And we kind of go through it and we kind of say, well, you know, what are the pros and cons of like that kind of business? I mean, you kind of have to be out by the side of the road. It's hard to market. You know, everyone drives by you. You know, you have to physically be there. You know, you have inventory that can spoil. And eventually we started talking and I said, well, what if we do, actually, I think it was his idea. He said, well, what about vending machines? It's the same thing, but you know, it's more of like a business. Like you don't have to be there. Your inventory doesn't spoil. Make money while you sleep, right? And so we got him a vending machine and we put it at one of our properties in Provo. And it was just so cool. I mean, like the look on his face, you know, as we're setting it up, it was great. But I'll never forget the first time we opened up the machine and he just sees this fat stack of $1 bills in there. And for a kid who makes like $5 or $6 a week, you know, doing chores here and there, he's pulling out $80 out of a vending machine. It's like he was just, I mean, he just grabbed it and was like, what? You know, this how is this even possible? Like, and he actually looked at me and said, I think I was making money while I sleep. And I was like, wow, that's really perceptive. I mean, like a lot of like grownups don't understand that.
Right, that's impressive.
you want that type of business. And obviously, I hope he doesn't go into vending machines for his career. But I hope that he can take some of those principles where start a business that is a going concern and that's generating revenue, whether you're in the office or you're not, whether you're on vacation or asleep or whatever.
It seems like the entrepreneurial spirit has sort of permeated your family.
Yeah.
How has your wife Kristen been on board for all of your ventures?
She's been really cool. She's been super supportive actually. I wasn't raised in a family that was entrepreneurial like at all. Like I come from like third or fourth generation like engineers. And that's great, right? Like that's awesome. My son Jack actually, he's obsessed with Legos right now, and he says he's going to be an engineer, but he wants to be like an Elon Musk engineer. What he says. So, but so I think that I wasn't really exposed to a lot of entrepreneurship until college when I started saying, hey, I'm going to go at it on my own with real estate or with mortgages or other little ventures. And so I think it's actually been more scary for me, more self doubt and more. Kind of conflict internally for me as we get going. Kristen was raised and her dad did a number of different things and would, you know, quit his job for a year and build him a house and then go do a different thing and just really didn't seem to have any fear for doing it. And things always worked out great for them. And so I think that her attitude has been just go for it. It'll work out. Or if it doesn't, you know, we'll fail quickly and it won't be a catastrophe. I mean, maybe you end up going back into the workforce with a couple $1,000 less in your bank account than, you know, when you started your venture. and I think also just what point in your life cycle, right? I mean, it's so easy to take risks straight out of college when you don't necessarily own a home and maybe you don't have a huge family you're okay with living kind of how you lived in college, you know, just being really, really cheap. And I think that's one of my biggest things that I learned is, you know, to be an entrepreneur and to have that flexibility, the luxury of choosing to be an entrepreneur, you have to be lean. You just do. I mean, you have to be lean and you have to have a little bit of cash or some type of a safety net to make it happen. So we've tried to continue that. I mean, even as we've seen some success in the recent years and watched the business grow and personally our financial situation's gotten much, much better. We're still cheap and it just feels good. I just like it. From an entrepreneur's mindset, you know, it's you're being efficient.
Right. That's awesome that she's on board with that too. Has she ever done anything entrepreneurial herself?
She has actually, yeah. So it was funny, kind of as we were getting Redstone started, she started following these blogs, right? Because we were being really cheap. We're trying to make every dollar stretch as far as it could. So she started following these like extreme couponing blogs where, I mean, it's like, it's so hilarious. It's like, you know, you get these coupons like out of the paper or online or something. I can't remember exactly how it works. And then you go to like a Walgreens or like a CVS and you slap them all down and you end up walking out with like a card full of stuff for like, you know, sometimes it would be like negative, like they would like pay her. she has this mind where she can just figure out like in her head, like how to combine all these things. And I think a lot of people are doing it. There's even a couple of TV shows about it eventually. And I think, you know, it's since become a fad because we're not in a recession and now we don't care about saving money as much. But she started this cool blog and she built it up pretty big and had a lot of daily readers. She's able to figure out the affiliate networks to get paid through purchases that people make or through advertising. It was great. So she built that up. And then I think we kind of sensed that maybe in 2012 or so, we sensed that, hey, people aren't super into this anymore. So we sold to a competitor. But it was really cool to watch her. She's the first one here to successfully build and exit a business. So I was really proud of her. She was great. She's actually looking at a couple of other things now. It's top secret, but but she's got a couple of really cool ideas, and we're building a house right now. Should be in it in the next 2 weeks, and once we're kind of established there, I think she's gonna to launch a new venture.
That's amazing. How do you guys find time to do all this stuff and still be parents and all the things that parenting requires you to do?
Yeah, that's the difficult part, I think. Building businesses and entrepreneurship, I think it's more like it's like a hobby as well. I mean, it's not just, so we really don't watch TV at night. So at night, you know, this is kind of the stuff that we talk about and we get excited about. And so we'll start just working on a project together or something. I know it's really nerdy, but but yeah, that's kind of where we find our time. But it is difficult, especially with three kids right now. It's tough.
Have there ever been any times along your road that you've made the wrong decision and chosen to go with a work thing when you should have been with your family?
Yeah, I think so. I think I've, especially earlier on where you feel almost like you have to or you're compelled to do certain things for the survival, right? I mean, and you look back on it and say, oh, well, that just didn't matter. But when you're in the thick of it, you're thinking, if I don't give this 110%, then the whole thing's going to blow up, right? And that's probably not accurate. So there's definitely been times where I've skipped out on family events because of some work meeting or something that I thought was super mandatory and I had to be there but really didn't have to. So trying to get better on that.
Yeah. Was it harder in the first stages of your business to be able to say no to certain things?
For sure, yeah, because I think that the way that you get started is you grow and you say yes to everything. You say yes to every opportunity. You make sure every client and every investor is just like so pumped like with your service because you need it. I mean, it's your lifeblood. And now I think that maybe the power is a little bit more on our side and we can kind of pick and choose opportunities, or we can say, hey, you know, look, we'll get back to you tomorrow on that, or I'll have to get that to you in 3 days. So yeah, it's definitely changed as we've become more secure and as the company's grown.
What kinds of things do you do now to recharge and be with your family?
Yeah, so maybe like 3 or 4 years ago, I discovered like Utah. Like it's crazy to say, like I came to school here as like the kind of too cool for school like Californian kid. I was like, well, you know, and like talking in like your surfer voice, you're like, you know, Utah sucks. and it's funny now, I actually, given the opportunity to go back to San Diego, I actually wouldn't take it. Even given cost of increase, you know, raises or something like that, I wouldn't do it. So Kristen and I started like climbing mountains here quite a bit. And then we discovered slot canyons in southern Utah maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And it's just been fantastic. I feel like between March and maybe September, there's not a free weekend. We're just road warriors at this point. And it's been a lot of fun. So we try and make it down to Zion National Park a ton, take the kids down little slot canyons, and that's really kind of my ideal vision for what my family does, is enjoy kind of the nature and the beauty that's around us, spend our family vacations, you know, with backpacks on, hiking over some mountain range rather than at some posh resort somewhere, which is fun, right? I mean, like, it's always fun to do that, but I just feel it's been so much more rewarding as a family to do a lot of the outdoor stuff together.
Is it hard to leave your business?
Again, I mean, I just, if a lot of these are just shorter trips, so if you're taking off on a Thursday night or something and you're going to get back in like Sunday night, like, you can still do a great trip, especially kind of in the Western U.S. You know, mm-hmm. you can jump on a plane, have a great weekend. But no, I mean, we absolutely do longer family vacations, but we've really enjoyed kind of the road warrior. Let's run off and do this quick thing over a weekend. That's been fun. And that's something that wasn't there when we were starting the business and earlier on in the family, is it was just kind of a little bit more stressful and we weren't enjoying life as much as we should.
Do you think you could have done it at the beginning of starting your business?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Really? Yeah. I think that, we took ourselves too seriously and, you know, and it's not good. Like, I mean, in your stress levels, like, you owe it to yourself to do things that you enjoy. You shouldn't just kind of hunker down forever.
Right.
You need a release, or you need something that, that takes your mind off of it and allows you to recharge.
Yeah. So what does that do for your family? How does it help them that you...
Yeah, well, we've just created amazing family memories. I mean, I not a whole lot of kids have made it to the top of a lot of the local mountains here. Taking trips with Kristen through slot canyons over multiple days. I think just the memories that we're creating, kind of the teamwork feel, is just great. You know, it's a little bit tougher with a 2-year-old right now. I'd say some of our stuff has been a little bit more hotel based, as he grows up, it'll be fun to kind of get more into the backcountry.
Yeah, I like that you mentioned that. There are a lot of things that are challenging about being a parent and making those adjustments. Do you think that that makes you more valuable as an investor, as a manager?
Yeah, I think so. I think it makes you a lot more understanding. you're a lot more compassionate, I think, with people, just seeing some of your own shortcomings as a parent. It makes it easier to relate to people, I think. And I think that it does force you to be a little bit more balanced, right? So, I know guys that that take an opposite approach and they're, I'm not going to ever have family, or I'm going to stay single forever. And that's great. And maybe it works for them. But for me, I just feel like I needed that balance to be able to be effective.
What would you say? Pretend you're an investor and you're looking at two very similar companies with very similar people, and one has a family and one doesn't. Which would you choose and why? It's a loaded question.
Yeah. Oh man. That is a loaded question. I don't know.
I guess if you chose the family man, why would you choose him?
Well, you have to realize that people have limits, right? So if you're expecting the guy, you know, that's just kind of going it on his own and working 100 hours a week to get it done, I guarantee you those hours aren't all effective, right? For me, I know when I hit about 55, it's like the marginal utility of each additional hour is like, it's like flatlined or like negative, you know, like I'm becoming like worse at that point. So I think that just understanding, hey, you know, this guy has a balanced life and you know, hopefully that jives with the business. That's kind of what I would expect to see. Yeah.
What are some specific things that Kristen does or that your kids do that support you and encourage you in your job?
They're always just really excited for what we're doing. They're actually in California right now. Yeah, I'm finishing a house, and I just said, "Look, you guys go on vacation. I've got to really get this done in the next 2 weeks." But they stopped by a development project that we have going in St. George. It was on their way, and they were really cool. They were like, "Oh, we're proud of you, Daddy. This is so cool. It's huge. It's beautiful." And they're always really complimentary, and I feel like my kids and my wife, I feel like they're proud of what we've accomplished. That always feels great, right? I mean, it always feels good to be held in esteemed by those that you love, as opposed to, you know, if they're like, "Oh man, your company sucks, your product sucks, and you know, all the hard work has been for nothing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's been good. A lot of times they'll text me during the day and say, hey, can we just drop by for real quick? And you know, can we bring you lunch or can we just say hi? That's been fantastic, especially when it's a tougher day or there's a lot of stress or we're working on a big project that she knows that we're worried about. And then when I get home, they're always so great. I mean, they're always, it's just kind of your idyllic, you know, walk in and daddy's home. I love it. It's great.
What kinds of things do you do when you get home to make sure that you are valuing your family time?
Yeah, this is probably where Kristen's going to say, you're lying. But I try and get in there and kind of put my phone down, because that's the biggest distraction, is you've been cranking it out as hard as you can all day, right? And I say this to Kristen sometimes. I said, I literally have sat in my desk, you know, for 9 hours, 10 hours, 11 hours more, and I worked as fast as I could, and it's hard to come out of that, right? You're just in the zone, like you're like in a flow state where you're just like getting stuff done. And then when you get home, it's hard to kind of say, okay, well, I just shot off 15 emails in the last 10 minutes of work. I'm really curious, you know, what these people have to say about, you know, or if there's a deal coming through. It's just so hard to not stay attached to your phone. But that's one thing that's really helped us, is my phone doesn't ding, or I don't get a notification when there's an email coming in. I have to like press the icon and like actually retrieve like my mail, which is great. And that's a good practice for the office as well. Kind of a once in the morning and once in the afternoon, just pass on email and then don't look at it the rest of the time. So that's been really good. And it's helped us to focus on the kids, get the kids fed, bathed, to bed, have some good time together.
I mean, you've touched on a lot of things. If you had to choose one thing that could be replicated in other families to find a way to balance the demands of your work and the needs of your family, right, what would that thing be?
I think it would just be more of a concept of be present. When you're at work, be present. Right? Don't be on social media or messing around or texting your buddies. Like, you're at work. Like, get it done. It's time to, you know, it's time to make it happen. Same thing when you're at home, be present, be at home. If you're not going to do it, like, stay at work, you know, and say, hey, I got to work later or something. But I think just being present is the biggest thing. And my kids and my wife have really picked up on when I'm present and playing with them and hanging out with them and planning, you know, trips or activities with them. They just love it.
That's great. Where do you see your company going in the future?
Yeah. Dreams. Oh, man. So we have a lot of opportunities in front of us right now. We have 13,000 beds of student housing right now. We actually acquired another complex in Rexburg this last week, 336 beds. We have a loaded pipeline of both acquisitions, developments, and third-party management. But I see us growing really big as a student housing firm. My goal from the beginning has been to achieve 100,000 beds. That would just be amazing. That would be about 1,500 employees for us. And about, you know, 60 or 70 of those would be at our corporate office. We're looking to hit 20,000 beds by the year 2018 and 30,000 beds by the year 2020. So it's really to just keep going and not go insane. I think that there's a lot of opportunities in our field right now. There's a lot of large funds that are starting to sell some of their properties and you can take down portfolios. There's a lot of universities that just have completely undeveloped student housing markets that need quality new product. And so we're hoping to address those and we're starting to develop at those universities. We also have some international opportunities right now that we're considering. We've been offered a opportunity to go to Canada and
very
start. Exactly. start working on the other side there. Latin America is huge. There's really no developed market, but all the indicators are there that there should be. So we're exploring some opportunities in Brazil and in Colombia right now. So I would love, you know, in 10 years to come back and tell you, hey, we're all over the Americas. I don't think that we're going to go to Asia or Africa or Europe. I think logistically, you know, it's tough enough to fly to Brazil. It's a 12-hour flight. I don't know. I don't know if we want to go further.
Do you see this turning into a family business?
That's an interesting question. I think in some form it will. We have we've invested personally into most of our projects, and so you know, we have a family kind of holding company that that's invested in probably 20 or 30 apartment complexes, and you know, as those start to sell, we'll have to redeploy assets and look for new properties, and you know, maybe that'll be smaller properties, more local. Maybe that'll just be redeploying into student housing complexes around around the country or around the world, but really looking to, you know, create just kind of a family investment firm at some point. And that might be, you know, 10 or 15 years off, but not sure. Yeah.
If not, you can partner up with your son to put vending machines in all of them.
Yeah, he might be the smartest one. Got a simple business.
Well, Grant, thank you so much for joining us. Really enjoyed it.
Thanks for having me.
We wish you the best of luck.
Hey, appreciate it.
What are the hardest things for your family about you running your own business?
I think that it's probably the stress. And you know, that you can tell when dad gets home and, you know, he's had a bad day. It's when it's your business, it's extremely personal. And I would say with entrepreneurship in general, your lows are going to be lower and your highs are going to be higher. And I think that, you know, when you're having a bad week or month and you know, some of these problems are really big problems, I think that you can kind of carry that home and your kids internalize it and your wife internalizes it. So that's one of my things that I've been working on is, okay, how do I really kind of try and leave this more at the office, even if it is all consuming? I've found, you know, if I can go for a trail run or if I can just run out the door and go for a 5 or 6 mile run, it really clears my head and you kind of put things into perspective. That's my current solution.
Have you ever been worried that you're not going to make it and not going to be able to support your family?
In the beginning, yeah, a ton. Now I think I think that we have enough employees and we have enough business that we could significantly scale down. And we've grown enough that I'd say, look, I mean, this would have to be like a court order to shut this thing down. Obviously.
So how do you deal with that in the beginning then?
Yeah, I think, you know, you kind of have a plan B in the back of your head and stay lean, right? I mean, I think that's one of the biggest takeaways is if you want to be an entrepreneur, you need to stay lean with your expenses, live within your means. And so we've always kind of taken that approach. We've said, hey, you know, let's live well beneath our means and let's stockpile for, you know, if there is some issue. But I look at it and say, look, you know, a lot of my friends are entrepreneurs. You know, I've been in business for 8 or so years. And I look at my friends that are working, and a lot of them have been laid off or their companies have gone under. You don't necessarily mitigate that risk by not being an entrepreneur. In fact, I actually think that it gives you more options. You're more visible and you build leadership skills and you build kind of life skills that would make you more valuable in the future if you had to do something else, as opposed to just kind of being at the mercy of a company that, not even their fault, you know, they have to downsize, right? So I don't see the risk as being as scary as a lot of people do, at least now. In the beginning, I did.
Well, there you have it. Thanks again to Grant for being on the show this week. I came away from talking to him with a handful of really important takeaways. The first one I want to point out is the last comment he made that alludes back to the beginning of the episode. There are risks in anything you do, whether it's staying at a company or starting your own. I think that it's easy to forget about the risks of continuing to do some of the things we're already comfortable with, whether that's in a career or in our relationships. So I think it's really good to be able to look back and analyze and think about those risks and decide whether or not we're willing to take them. His second and more important point, in my opinion, is the advice to be present wherever you're at. If you've listened to our other episodes, you'll realize that this isn't the first time that's been said. When you're at work, be at work. When you're at home, be at home. It's more efficient, and your family will benefit from that commitment.
I hope you've all learned as much from this episode as I have, and I honestly hope it's made you a better working parent. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Steven Olson, and we'll see you next week on the Work-Life Balance Project. Psst. Hey everyone, thanks for sticking around. If you want to tell us about how you manage your work and your family, you can find us online at theworklifebalanceproject.com, or you can find us on Instagram at theworklifebalanceproject. We love hearing about how having a family drives you to be a better professional. Please don't forget to subscribe to our show. We'll be here every week wherever you get your podcasts.